This is Movies for the Blind, Episode 87, Things to Come, Part 2.
Why was all this science ever allowed? Why was it ever let begin? Science is an enemy of everything that's natural in life.
Hello and welcome to Movies for the Blind, where you can enjoy films without looking at a screen. I'm Valerie Hunter. We continue with Things to Come, which has already successfully predicted the beginning of World War II and the London Blitz. It has also begun a debate about the merits of war, mainly between the anti-war John Cabal and the pro-war blue sky thinker Passworthy. When war did descend on every town, a thinly veiled London, Passworthy's young son was partially buried in some of the rubble from a devastating air attack, while Cabal was last heard from trying to help the pilot he shot down in a dogfight, but instead was able to help a little girl escape the ravages of poison gas. Where the story splits with reality is that this world war has dragged on for decades, going from 1940, remember this was made in 36, to 1970, where every town is a village reduced to medieval-level living conditions, with Cabal's young friend Harding now a middle-aged, frustrated doctor. Harding's daughter, Mary, tries to help him and her husband, Richard Gordon, a mechanic stuck with trying to recycle airplane parts to appease every town's leader, the boss, who earned his place by killing anyone afflicted with a plague years ago and aims to keep his place by continuing this perpetual war, because it's really all anyone has ever known. But a strange new plane has just arrived in every town, so let's find out what it brings. In part 2 of 3 of Things to Come. The plane taxis through a field among the skeletons of long-dead warehouses and slowly comes to rest. As the curious townspeople approach, the cockpit hatch is opened and a white-haired man stands in a sleek uniform and with a large shield-like hood behind and over his head. He steps out to meet the people halfway. A henchman with an old helmet and rifle is the first to get to the visitor, John Cabal.
Who's in control of this part of the country?
The chief. What we call the boss.
Good. I want to see him.
He sent me to arrest you.
You can't do that. But I'll come and see him.
Well, you're under arrest whether you'll admit it or not. The country's in a state of war.
Well, come along. I know the way.
John steps ahead of the henchman, who follows him. Soon after, with his hood removed, he reaches town.
I remember this place well. I used to live over there for years. Ever heard of a man named Passworthy? Harding?
Look, here he comes now.
Surrounded by curious townspeople, John approaches Harding, Richard, and Mary.
So you're Harding.
I seem to remember something about you.
You were a young man.
You're John Cabal. I remember you. I used to visit your house here endless years ago before the wars. You're still flying. Your hair is gray, but you look young enough.
Harding here. Who's in control in this place?
We have a chief, a warlord.
The usual thing. I want to look up your warlord. Where can we go and talk?
My laboratory is the best thing. It's just over here.
Right.
They lead John through the ruins and up to stairs to Harding's lab.
Here!
Where the henchman catches up.
You can't go in there. You're under arrest. You've got to go with me to the chief.
All in good time. I must see this gentleman first.
Well, you've got to go with me. Orders are orders. The boss first.
The boss sits in his headquarters as his woman, Roxana, paces.
Where is this man? Why isn't he brought here?
He's gone up with Dr. Harding.
He has to be brought here. I must deal with him.
Yeah, you can't go to him. That's impossible. He must come to you.
Well, send another man for him. Send 3 men. He's got to be brought here.
At Harding's.
So that's the sort of man your boss is. Not an unusual type. Everywhere we find these little semi-military upstarts robbing and fighting. That's what endless warfare has led to. Brigandage. What else could happen? But we, who are all that are left of the old engineers and mechanics, have pledged ourselves to salvage the world. We have the airways, all that's left of them. We have the seas. And we have ideas in common. The brotherhood of efficiency. The Freemasonry of science.
We're the last trustees of civilization when everything else has failed.
I've been waiting for this.
Richard stands.
I'm yours to command.
Not mine. Not mine. No more bosses. Civilization's to command.
The boss's men enter.
Tell him he'll have to come. He won't come on foot.
Well, we'll have to carry him.
I don't know what'll happen to me, sir, if you don't come.
Smirking at Richard, John goes willingly. And soon enters the boss's once stately headquarters.
Well, what do you want to see me about?
Who are you? Do you know this country's at war?
At war? Still at it, eh? We must clean that up.
What do you mean, we must clean that up? All war? Who are you, I say?
The law. Law and sanity.
I am the law here.
I said law and sanity.
Where do you come from? Who are you?
Wings over the world.
Well, you know you can't come into a country like this in this fashion.
I'm here. Do you mind if I sit down?
He sits regardless.
And now, for the fourth time, who are you?
I tell you, wings over the world.
That's nothing. What government are you under?
Common sense. I belong to World Communications. We just run ourselves.
Yes. You'll run into trouble if you try and land here in wartime. What's the game?
Order and trade.
Trade, eh?
The boss stands.
Can you do anything in munitions?
Not our line of business.
Fuel, spare parts. We've got planes. We've got planes. I've got boys that have trained a bit on the ground. We've no fuel. It hampers us. We might do a deal.
We might.
I know where I can get some fuel. I've got my plans later, but if you can manage a temporary accommodation, we'd do business.
World Communications helps no one to make war.
End war, end war. I want to make victorious peace.
I seem to have heard that phrase before, when I was a young man. But it made no end of war.
Now look here, Mr. Aviator, let's see how we stand. Come down to actuality. The way you swagger, you don't seem to realize you're under arrest. You and your machine.
You'll find other planes looking for me if I happen to be delayed.
We'll deal with them later. I even start a trading agency here, if you like. I have no objection. The first thing we shall want is to get our planes in the air again.
Quite. A laudable ambition. But our new order has an objection to private aeroplanes.
The impudence.
I'm not talking about private aeroplanes. Our aeroplanes are public aeroplanes. This is an independent sovereign state at war. I know nothing about any old order. I'm the chief here, and I'm not taking any orders, old or new, from you.
Suppose I've walked into trouble.
Yeah, you can take that as right.
When the boss steps away, Roxana confronts John.
Where have you come from?
John stands.
I flew from our headquarters in Basra this morning. We have some hundreds of new type planes, and we're building more, fast. The factories are working again. We're gradually restoring order and trade in the whole Mediterranean area.
We're scouting this region now to see how things are.
You found out. This is an independent sovereign state.
Yes, we must talk about that.
We don't discuss it.
We don't approve of independent sovereign states.
You don't approve?
We mean to stop them.
That's war.
If you will.
Well, I think we know how we stand. Burton, take this man. If he gives you any trouble, club him. You hear that, Mr. Wings Over Your Wits?
My friends know my whereabouts. If I don't come back, they'll send a force to find me.
Perhaps they won't find you.
They'll find you.
They'll find me ready. Take him to the detention room downstairs.
The boss retires into his bedroom and flops onto his bed. Roxana enters.
Now, was that wise?
Wise?
Yes, wise, to quarrel with him at once.
Quarrel with him? Confound him, he began to quarrel with me. You must clean that up.
Clean that up?
My war.
There's things behind him.
Things behind him? Some sort of aerial bus driver standing up to me. Like an equal.
So you lost your temper and you bullied him.
I don't bully, I just handle the man.
Meanwhile, John is left alone to inspect the detention room. He tests a barred window in the bedroom.
He's the first real aviator that has come this way for years. Think of what that means, my dear. You want aeroplanes, don't you? You want your aeroplanes put in order? A really clever man could have had some of those machines up long ago. I'm sure of it.
Along comes this stranger who's going to clean me up.
He rises.
You expect me to hand my planes over to him, lock, stock, and barrel?
Why talk nonsense? You could have persuaded him under supervision.
Supervision? The sort of oafs I've got here to supervise him. It'd be too much for them.
Oh, well, of course, if it's going to be too much for you, why don't you hang him and hide his machine before the others are after you?
I don't agree with you. Now, this stranger hasn't taken me by surprise.
He flops into a chair.
I knew he was coming. Yes, I knew he was coming. I felt this conspiracy of their bus drivers brewing somewhere in the world. I felt they were getting ahead with their aeroplanes down there somewhere. Very well, now's our chance. We've got this fella bottled up. They won't even begin to miss him for days. I've got everything fixed now for an attack straight away on the Floss Valley to the old coal and shale pits where there's oil too. Then, up we buzz.
The battle begins in the coal and shale pits, with armed men charging each other. The boss sends a man off to throw a grenade, which knocks a man down. Another of the boss's men uses a machine gun, while more soldiers charge toward the mining equipment. In his fur vest, the boss oversees the proceedings of troops on horseback and on foot. One soldier climbs a high tower with a flag. When another flag falls, the boss points up to the tower, where the new flag is secured to a railing. That night, with torches to light their way, townspeople celebrate the boss's triumphant return with his troops. He and Roxana dismount, acknowledging the cheers. Soon after, he returns to headquarters in a fur cape.
Victory approaches! Your sacrifices have not been in vain. Our old struggle with the Hillman has come to its climax. Our new victory at the coal pits has brought a great supply of oil within our reach. Once more, we may hope to take the air and look our invaders in the face. 40 aeroplanes. Larger force, I venture to say, as any in the world. This new oil can be adapted to our needs. Quite a simple business.
Richard is among those listening.
Nothing remains but the conclusive bombing of the hills. Then for a time, we can hope for a rich, rewarding peace. A peace of the strong man armed who keepeth his house.
He turns to Richard.
Now at the supreme crisis, you, Gordon, our master mechanic, refuse your help. Where are my planes?
Job's more difficult than you think. Half your machines are hopelessly old. You haven't 20 sound ones. To be exact, 19. You'll never get the others off the ground. The thing can't be done as you imagine it. I want assistance.
What assistance?
Your prisoner.
What, you want that chap in black that wings over the world? You want him released?
He knows his business. I don't. Enough. Make him my technical advisor.
I don't trust you technical chaps.
Then you won't get an aeroplane up.
I want those planes.
Well, if you get it.
Then I want Dr. Harding out, too.
Where are the socialists?
I can't help that. If anybody in every town can adapt to that crude oil for our aeroplanes, it's Harding. If not, it can't be done.
Well, we had a bit of an argument with Harding.
He's the only man who can do this work for you.
The boss gestures for Burton to go get him, which he does, as Roxana enters the room. As the boss takes off his decorated helmet, Harding is delivered bound.
Undo his hands.
An officer unties Harding's hands from behind his back.
Well? Well what? The salute.
Damn the salute.
Sure. Oh, never mind the salute. Now we'll talk about that later. Now look here, let's see how we stand. You, Gordon, are to undertake the reconstruction of our air force. The prisoner, Cabell, is to be placed at your disposal. Everywhere he goes, he is to be under guard and observation. No relaxing in that. Neither you nor he are to go within 100 yards of his airplane. Mind that. Now you, Harding, are to assist Gordon with his cure problem and place your knowledge of poison gas at our disposal.
I have nothing to do with poison gas.
You've got the knowledge of our to wring it out of you.
He clutches Harding's shirt.
State your mother, your father, the totality of your interests. No discipline can be too severe for the man that denies that by word or deed.
He releases him.
Nonsense! We have a duty to civilization. You and your sort are driving us straight back to eternal barbarism.
But this is pure treason. I protest against being dragged away from my work. Confound your silly war and your war material and all the rest of it. All my life has been interrupted and wasted and spoiled by war. I'll not stand it any longer.
But this is treason! Treason!
Come!
Commander, stop that.
We've need of your service.
Well, what do you want?
You're conscripted! You're under my orders now, and under no other orders in the world. I'm master here, I'm the state. I need fuel and gas.
Neither fuel nor gas.
You refuse?
Absolutely.
I don't want to be forced to extremities.
May I have a word?
Richard intervenes.
I understand you want all of those out-of-date clocks of yours that you call your Air Force to fly again and fly well.
They shall!
With the help of that man Cabell you have in the cells, Dr. Harding here, and we even have a dozen of your planes in the air again.
Harding grabs Richard's shoulder.
You! You're a traitor to civilization. I won't touch it!
If you will give me Cabell, and if you leave me free to talk with Harding, I promise you you'll see your Air Force, a third of it at any rate, in the sky again.
You talk as if you're driving a bargain with me.
I'm sorry, Chief. Not I who make these conditions. It is the nature of things. You're going to have technical services. You're going to have scientific help without treating the men who give it to you properly.
That's what I've said all along. Don't bully too hard, my dear. There's a limit to bullying. You can't make a dog hunt by beating it.
I want those planes!
Later, Roxana enters the detention room.
I wanted to look at you.
I am at your service, madam.
You're the most interesting thing that has happened in every town for years.
You honor me.
You come from outside. I've begun to forget there was anything outside. I want to hear about it.
May I offer you my only chair?
Well, I'm not a stupid woman.
I'm sure.
She sits.
This life here is limited. War always going on and never ending. Flags marching. Oh, I adore the chief. I've always adored him since he took control in the pestilence days when everyone else lost heart. He rules. He's firm. Every woman finds him strong and attractive. I can't complain. I have everything that is to be had here. And yet, this is a small, limited world we live in. You bring in the breath of something greater. When I saw you swooping down out of the air, when I saw you marching into the town hall, I felt this man lives in a greater world. And you spoke of the Mediterranean and the East, of your camps and factories. I've read about the Mediterranean and Egypt and Greece and India. Oh, I can read a lot of those old books. I'm not like most of the younger people here. I learned a lot before education stopped and schools closed down. I want to see that world. Skies, snowy mountains, blue seas, sunshine,
pine. If I had my way, you could fly to all that in a couple of hours.
If you were free, and if I was free. I don't suppose any man has ever understood any woman since the beginning of things. You don't understand our imagination, how wild our imaginations can be. I wish I were a man. Oh, if I were a man.
She stands.
What are your people trying to do to us? What are you going to do to this boss of mine?
The immediate question seems, what does he mean to do to me?
Something violent and foolish, unless I prevent it.
That's how I see things.
And if he kills you?
We shall come here and clean things up.
But if you're killed, how can you say we?
We go on. That's how things are. We are taking hold of things.
John peers through a barred window.
Science and government in the long run, no man is indispensable. The human things go on. We, forever.
I see. And this warlike state of ours here.
It has to vanish, like the Tyrannosaurus and the saber-toothed tiger.
The room door is unlocked and the boss enters.
Oh, so here you are.
I said I should talk to him and I have.
I told you to leave that fellow alone.
Yes, and sat up there drinking and swaggering and looking as proud as you could. Rudolph the Victorious. And here am I trying to find out what this black invader means. You think I wanted to come and talk to him? This gray, cold man? While you're swaggering here, there are more planes away there at Basra getting ready.
Basra?
His headquarters. Have you never heard of Basra?
These are matters for us to talk about.
This lady has been putting me through a severe cross-examination. But the gist of it is that away there in Basra, new aeroplanes are rising night and day, like hornets round a hornet's nest.
What happens to me is a small affair. They'll finish you. The new world of United Airmen will finish you. Listen, you can almost hear them coming now.
Not a bit of it.
What he says is the truth.
What he says is bluff.
Make peace with the Airmen and let him go.
That means surrender of our sovereign independence.
But more machines will be coming and more.
And he's here, hostage for their good behavior. Come, madam, enough of this little diplomatic mission of yours.
He pushes her toward the door.
You've got the subtlety of a bullfrog.
He drunkenly watches her stalk out. Then turns to John.
Yeah, I don't know what she's been saying to you. I don't much care. There's no making peace between you and me. It's your world or mine, and it's going to be mine. With all your threats of swarms of hornets and so on, you're a hostage, remember that. Don't be too sure you'll win.
He snuffs out a candle.
Just sit here and think that over, Mr. Wings Over the World.
Another day at the hangar.
Now get round to the other side and look at these engine bear bracings, quickly.
To avoid the guard nearby, Richard walks around the other side of a plane's nose so John can talk to him through an opening.
I could get to my plane as a wireless there.
Hopefully they won't even trust me.
You shall have to make a job of this.
As the guard comes closer, John keeps pretending to fix something.
I can manage to get your reserve petrol. Let me have that for this plane.
Good. It won't be easy to make a getaway.
He feels the guard behind him.
These oil pump connections aren't very good, but we'll have to risk it.
I think we'll manage it all right now that Harding knows his part of the job.
Good.
Later, the biplane they were working on is in the air and maneuvering well. On the ground, Mary and Roxana notice.
Look! It's your Gordon. He's flying at last.
Later, in Basra, a huge aircraft with a monstrous wingspan sits dwarfing dozens of working people who wear sleek black uniforms similar to John's. One of them spots something landing.
Oh! An aeroplane out of the arc, boys! It's pre-war.
Another man steps out of the aircraft as Richard is brought with a co-pilot.
Where do you come from?
Come from the north, from every town. Says Cabal is a prisoner.
They've got him, sir, and he's in danger. I had great difficulty in getting here.
You say Cabal is in danger?
In very great danger. The boss there is a violent tough.
Job for our new squadron.
Well, now we've got a chance to try the new gas of peace on somebody.
There's no time to lose, sir. May I report to headquarters?
Yes. Take him to the council.
Back in every town, the boss is awakened in bed by Burton.
At last, we have definite news.
What is it?
Gordon didn't fall into the sea. He got away. A fishing boat saw him making for the French coast. Perhaps he reached his pals.
Well,
he'll be coming back. He'll be bringing the others with him.
Curse these world communications.
He stands as a servant brings a tea tray.
Curse all airmen and gasmen and machine men. Why didn't we leave their machines and their sciences alone? I might have known. Why did I tamper with flying?
Well, we needed aeroplanes against the hill states. Somebody else would have started in again with aeroplanes and gas and bombs if we hadn't. These people would have come interfering anyhow.
Why was all this science ever allowed? Why was it ever let begin? Science is an enemy of everything that's natural in life. I dreamt of those fellows last night, great, ugly, black, inhuman chaps. Oh, like machines, bombing and bombing.
Yes, I guess they'll come bombing, all right.
Then we'll fight them! Since Gordon got away, I've had those air boys up to see me. They've got guts. They'll do something still. We'll fight them. Ha! We've got hostages. Better than to shoot them anyway. There's that chap Harding.
Of course. He can't tell us what to do against this gas. He's going to have to pull his arm off and knock his teeth down his throat. Get him.
Burton sends someone else to do it as the boss approaches the tea tray left for him.
I have to come to Earth sometime. What is this world communications? A handful of men like ourselves. They're not magic.
In Basra, many people run to board the huge aircraft, wearing parachute packs on their backs. They head up the stairs, as boxes of small white globes are loaded as well. Quickly, smoothly, the boxes slide along a track into the craft. Then the track is hustled away and the stairs folded up into the door. Outside every town.
Do you, I entrust these good, tried, tested machines? You are not mechanics, you are warriors. You have been trained not to think, but to do. Maybe to die. I salute you. I, your chief.
He thrusts his hands into the air, and his pilots return the salute, then hurry to their biplanes. Later, life goes on as usual in every town. But the boss scans the skies and walks toward headquarters to meet his men bringing out Harding.
What do you know about these world communication people? Have they got gas? What sort of gas?
I know nothing about gas.
Tell us about these masks, anyway.
He hands him an old gas mask.
Well, they're rotten. They're no good at all.
What sort of gas have they got?
I tell you, gas isn't my business.
Well, they can't gas us when you're here, anyway.
Here they are! Listen! They're coming already!
They all turn to a cloud bank. Flying out of it is the huge aircraft, with dual fuselages between its wings. It's followed by similar aircrafts, several of them, cruising calmly through the sky. Mary, Harding, and the boss watch, and more curious townspeople gather in the square to do the same. The dual fuselages are connected by a flat piece as long as either of the wings. Aboard, amid a battery of gauges, Richard approaches one of his new colleagues.
Miguel, don't stand by.
He looks down over a railing at the old planes he used to work on starting to move. They struggle into the air, some of them wavering. As the majestic squadron powers on, the boss runs for a better look.
Clumsy great things! Our boys will have them down in no time. They're too clumsy!
They continue their cruising altitude. Aboard, some people monitor readings while others go to their stations, as the boss's planes start their attack. Their enemies watch curiously. Roxana approaches the boss.
Go on! I'll back you!
Wings of the world fly on, almost oblivious. As the biplanes dive and swoop like mosquitoes, some biplanes burst into flames and crash into each other.
Oh, Lord, got it!
They're both coming down, cowards!
But they can't forget that we have hostages!
The hostages? I'm not done yet. Go on, Peter, bring them out here, out in the open, climb up where they can be seen.
The henchmen drag Harding and Mary further out toward him.
Where's the other fellow? He's the prize hostage. He's the best of the lot. They'll know him. Pitch him. Pitch him.
But they notice bombs falling and giving off white smoke.
Look. Is that gas?
Above, more bombs are dropped. People collapse around the white smoke as the boss confronts Harding with a pistol.
You won't get out of this.
Roxana stops him.
You?
Don't you see? We're beaten.
More and more people collapse.
Shoot them! What are you all doing? Why don't you...
Roxana turns to Mary.
I never did you any harm. I saved your father and I saved you. Couldn't you call up your man there to stop this?
I won't have it like this. What's happening? Everything's swimming.
Pulls out his pistol.
Shoot!
And stumbles around.
Shoot! We never shot enough yet! We never shot enough!
He falls into some stairs.
We spared them, now they've got us. Our world are there.
He convulses.
Why should I be beaten like this?
He struggles up to get hold of the bell pull.
Shoot! Shoot!
He fires into the air.
Shoot! Shoot!
Firing into the air again. He collapses again. Near where the bulletin on the wall reads, Long live the chief. The people of every town lie all around. Above, parachutes begin to open as people jump from the aircrafts. More and more of them walk off of platforms and float down. Soon after, they walk across fields with no guns slung over their shoulders, then arrive in the Everytown Square, walking among the bodies.
There they are.
Richard spots Mary slumped and tied to a post.
Mary!
He unties her and gets her to return to consciousness.
No, no, she's not hurt. She's asleep like the others.
Two men run out of headquarters.
Cabell, safe!
He comes out.
Cabell!
Well done, Gordon!
Well, they laughed at me for sticking to my gas mask. But thanks to that, I'm here and everyone else is sleeping. I wonder if they'll ever use gas masks again.
Sir!
What is it?
He steps over to the boss.
This man's not sleeping. He's dead.
Dead in his world, dead with him. And a new world beginning. Poor old Bots, he and his flags and his folly. And now for the rule of the air, and a new life for mankind.
The rest of the people of every town begin to awake from their sleep. Okay, so the good guys vanquish the bad guy. The people awake from their sleep. You would think that this would be the end. But we have more than 50 years still to go in this film. What will every town become? And what will become of Cabal's meritocracy in practice? Find out in the conclusion of Things to Come next time on Movies for the Blind. Roxana was played by Margareta Scott, who went on to have a long career in film, on stage, and on TV. She would be best known in the 70s and 80s as Mrs. Pumphrey in the BBC series All Creatures Great and Small, also a favorite in the U.S. on PBS. For more information and links on the movies, about description, and how to subscribe, check the blog, moviesfortheblind.com, where you can also find out about this podcast's Creative Commons license. The MP3s are currently being hosted by Blind File Sharing, with easy, affordable, and accessible file storage and transfer with visually impaired users in mind. To find out more, visit blindfilesharing.com. The movies are from the Internet Archive, so please support universal access to human knowledge by visiting and donating at www.archive.org. Thank you for downloading and for listening. Be back next week. Take care.